diastasis recti, what is it?
So diastasis rectus abdominis is a symptom that there is a dysfunction going on within your whole system. This is a hot topic now in the prenatal fitness, postpartum fitness world. And I think it's just coming about more and more now because a lot more women are continuing to exercise. They're exercising through their like daily activity, daily life. Like they get involved in exercise earlier and continue through their pregnancy. We wrote a blog called Filling the Gap. And there's part one, part two, part three. Babies are actually born with diastasis, mm-hmm. ab separation, and this approximates as babies learn to interact with their world, their surroundings, and they're starting to like see their feet, see their hands, and then they learn to roll over, and then they learn to crawl. And that's basically how we heal diastasis in our postpartum series and our postpartum visits. We break it down. We hit each milestone, so like dead bug type thing, and we break it down and we call it functional progression 1, functional progression 2, 3, 4, 5.
But mechanically, you said it's a whole body.
Yeah, it's thing, like, so we view the core from like the base of the skull down to the pubic bone.
Okay.
This ab separation happens basically where the linea alba is within the rectus abdominis.
So that six pack, you got a right and a left.
And yeah.
It's connected by, you can't see fascia. It on the outside, but it's connected by this connective tissue called the linea alba, the white line on the inside. So the actual diastasis is when that comes apart.
That separates, yeah.
The right and left side come apart.
This can happen in men and women. And basically, what we have found is that there's, you know, something going on in the lower back, something going on in the pelvis. Maybe mom doesn't know how to breathe through her using her diaphragm. And that's where the huge, like all, maybe even all those together, that's where the dysfunction happens.
Is it true, or do you find that a more fit rectus abdominis muscle is more likely to separate during pregnancy because it doesn't stretch as well?
No, I've actually seen the
opposite. The opposite. Yeah. Okay.
I see it like we were talking about in one-dimensional training or very sedentary people.
So one-dimensional training, I mean imbalance between only work out the frontal muscles.
Right. Or maybe you only run or you only do like spinning or I don't know what else you do.
Is there any exercises a woman should avoid to prevent diastasis?
By 40 weeks, there's going to be some sort of separation in all women. I think there's a study out now that says, it's either by 8 weeks or by 12 weeks. Maybe it's 12 weeks that any larger than a two-finger separation is considered abnormal. I mentioned earlier, whenever somebody calls for a consult and they're like 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever, no crunches, no planks, no anything with extreme flexion of the trunk here. So like bicycle crunches, like all anything like that, just avoid. And
during pregnancy
and for a year postpartum, none of our moms do it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And what about like extreme stretching of the ab, like an upward facing dog in yoga?
That's kind of just to comfort level. I mean, eventually the belly's going to get in the way, but some women still love to like use a bolster, put their,
right. That's what I'm saying.
It feels good. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that's fine.
So you say if it feels good,
yeah,
it shouldn't cause any problems.
And most women like that are training with us, they've kind of, you know, they're already in tune or know what they're looking for. And maybe they do an exercise like a pull up and maybe they're doing just strict pull ups and they see like the whole body tension, or maybe, you know, if they get a little kip going that they start to see a little coning happening, then maybe they switch to ring rows or inverted rows or something that's going to cause less of an exaggeration of that symptom.
So it's actually a crunching motion that causes it to separate, not an arching back or an overstretch.
Well, it doesn't cause it to separate. It just exaggerates the symptom becomes more apparent.
I see.
Yeah, I sometimes will use a support belt during exercise. Like if you notice that it's happening, so yeah. We'll give them a support belt to wear across the rectus abdominis.
Yeah,
so
I'll do some taping. I'll do some taping and I'll get them on the functional progression exercises right away. Because you can definitely prevent worsening. Like, you don't want it to get any worse.
Sure.
And then if someone already has it, let's say during pregnancy or after birth, what do you recommend in terms of getting those muscles to knit back together? Or is there anything?
Yeah.
Crawl like a baby. Is that what you're saying?
No. Crawl like a baby is definitely key. But we have this thing called the Queen in Training Program, and it's an ebook. And then we have the postpartum series where we literally start with diaphragm breathing, belly breathing, go on to functional progression 1, 2, 3. I mean, it's our idea of rehab for post-birth. Like, there's nothing available for women in our country. And so we're teaching them how to use their body again with the core as the focus.
Hmm. Oh, that's what you're saying. Just like a baby learns those steps. I understand.
Yeah. A lot of women I see, like, I get a lot of women that are like a year and a half postpartum and they're like, I tried this online. I tried this support belt. I tried this. And basically, they've just kind of looked for a quick fix post-birth, and none of those really work, or they're still having urinary incontinence, or, you know, those kind of things that happen, which are common, but urinary incontinence is not normal. Like, it's common, and it's your body's way of communicating to you that something's wrong.
What's your opinion of support belts in general?
Like, for postpartum, I like the Mama Strut for the icing, the like compression for what it is, but I don't think it's a support belt's not going to do the job that your body needs to learn to do. So it's not going to take the place of learning how to breathe again, learning how to use your core to function through everyday life.
Right. It may be almost like a crutch.
Yeah.
For a little while, but it's not the solution.
Right.
What about after a baby comes, how soon can people get back into exercise?
Well, that definitely depends. You know, if somebody has a cesarean birth, we like to tell them, hey, like, this is a major abdominal surgery. Like, you're definitely going to be slower to recover than maybe somebody that had a vaginal drug-free birth. Our society likes to say, hey, wait 6 weeks, but there's nothing magical that happens at 6 weeks. Weird.
Well, one thing magical happens at 6 weeks, which is in the medical model, that's the doctor has a chance to take a look at you, meaning you have the baby and then they don't see you for a month and a half. So I think the 6 weeks comes from they just want to check and make sure things are back as the way it was before they sign off on
the exercise. Well, and there's many traditions all over the world that talk about, you know, I think they call it quarantina and you know, really taking those 40 days to rest and, you know, like you were saying, how important it is to recover.
Totally. Most of our moms, we don't allow to do anything for 2 weeks. Like, hey, don't even call us for 2 weeks. Don't even email us. Like, even if you're all the way in the UK, like,
no contact.
Yeah, you should be lying naked with that baby and maybe your partner for at least 2 weeks. And we talk a lot about preparing for that period because you're going to need food. You're going to need help. Like, make that magic happen. Like, set yourself up for success. Do the afterbirth plan, you know. So we do have some people that are like, okay, I'm ready to work out, like at week four. And, you know, I think they are just so used to having an agenda and something to do. So we put them on like breathing and walking and
wearing your baby. Well, that's good because a lot of that exercise is more mental than physical.
It's so mental.
Like, you need to have something to do.
Yeah. So we'll do, this is kind of, so, okay, 2 weeks, cool, you feel fine. How about you walk with your baby 3 times a week for 30 minutes wearing your baby? And if there's no vaginal bleeding or urinary incontinence, then talk to me again after 2 weeks. You know,
so they've got to four.
Now they've got to four. And then, okay, let's figure it out from there.
I have moms that go hiking at 4 weeks.
Yeah,
I mean, they feel great. And
yeah, and as long as there's like no vaginal bleeding, no, like, no pain in the pants, and you feel good. And usually these are moms that had an unmedicated birth, or maybe there's a little something. Then they're the ones around 4, 5, or 6 weeks that are like, clawing to like start the postpartum series or do something, you know.
Oh, so your postpartum series, the birth fit postpartum series, starts technically at 6 weeks.
Yeah, we have let people in at like 4 weeks.
If they know people.
Mm-hmm. And depending on how their birth went, like we'll talk to them first.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.
And speaking of how their birth went, is there any recommendations you give in terms of pushing to avoid straining the pelvic floor? Like any certain ways to push or to use the abs, to not use the ab
right.
muscles?
I think that's, pushing is going to depend on where you give birth, or it's going to be heavily influenced by that.
Well, it'll be influenced by a lot of things, like where you give birth. Mm-hmm. If you have an epidural, you're kind of limited in
totally.
What you can do.
But let's say
you can do anything.
In an ideal situation.
Breathing, like you're guiding the whole situation, or your baby's guiding the whole situation. Like you're breathing baby down as slow as you need to or as fast as you need to.
And so would you recommend bearing down or against bearing down?
I mean, if you feel the urge, like I've been at home births where they're like, I feel like I need to push. And you're like, okay, go with that. You know, what feels right to you, do it.
It goes back to the theme of birth fit throughout, which has been be intuitive, right?
Yeah.
So there's a stark contrast in my mind of two births I was at recently, a hospital birth where it was a great team, but they were uber coaching on the pushing.
On the pushing
like, now push.
And they count. Breathe
in and push, you know. And then this other birth, which was a home birth, it happened to be a home birth with a midwife, but I see this sometimes at the hospital too, where they didn't say a word.
Right.
She was doing amazing and she would just feel it and she was doing fine.
Yeah.
So they didn't tell her like what position to get into. They didn't tell her how long
right.
to push or, you know, maximize it. Come on, get that. It wasn't like that at all. You know, and I don't know, she pushed maybe 40 minutes, which is about average for her first kid. And it was just great. The baby slowly progressed further and further and further. So I think it's ideal that if
you have
things
space,
are going well
yeah.
and she's not asking for support and help, then just, you let her find it.
Mom's got it.
Especially if it's the first time. There's a little bit of a learning curve.
Yeah.
Never pushed before. And so I think intuitively a lot of people think you're pushing forward, but really you're pushing back a little bit. And it takes a little time to get used to it. But I kind of feel like the birth fit motto here, you know, be in touch with your own mind and body is really key. But for somebody who just... There is a personality type who wants to be told what to do.
They need to be guided.
And for those people, I think Ivy's question is important. Like when you're guiding somebody on how to push, is there something specific to do or not to do to, number one, be
right,
productive, but number two, prevent an injury?
Well, I think, so let's say I've actually experienced numerous, maybe a handful of women that have had injuries related to birth with epidurals. And it's just, and I don't know the answer to this, because I think they maybe had too much of a dose to where they couldn't feel their body. And, you know, the women I'm thinking of, they were yogis, they were runners, they were, you know, they've been through athletic events. You know, one in particular I'm thinking about, she got an epidural. They gave her an epidural like at 8 centimeters, which that's kind of, she's already there.
Late in the game, right?
Yeah. Almost... But it made her completely numb. And, you know, she's never had any medication in her life. They coached her to push. Like, they did the whole counting thing. They did everything. And, you know, after baby came out and mom's holding baby, she's like, hey, I think I need to use the bathroom. She gets up, tries to use the bathroom, and can't walk. Doctor's like, oh, that's okay, you just gave birth. And she's like, no, I don't, like, this doesn't feel right. Long story short, she, symphysis pubic dysfunction, totally, ooh, sprained her pelvis. Like,
oh, yeah. Did they pull her legs back?
Yeah, they did everything.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
Sometimes moms will come in with really displaced,
yeah, pubic, like, symphysis. One person had it over here, one person had it over here.
And then meanwhile,
yeah, they're telling her to push.
And they're pulling, and then,
yeah,
they just can't handle it.
I think that's the, like, the scarier part about it is when you're not, you can't feel, you can't, you have no, your body's, there's nothing there to tell your body to stop, you know?
Yeah, you're actually making me think of a client I had who was actually unmedicated birth, but it was directed pushing, and they were telling her to push, and she did. She pushed her baby out in an hour, which is pretty average.
Yeah.
But she's a small woman, and it was a big baby, yeah, and she had a second degree tear that then later she experienced a bladder prolapse.
Mm.
And it is, you know, we can't prove whether that, right, had to do with the directed pushing or not, but it's a big question of the relationship between pushing and pelvic health.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a study on this, and the directed pushing did speed things up,
but not significantly,
and left you more traumatized.
Yeah.
But
I forget, I read that somewhere.
Generally speaking, I think if a woman's in tune and touch, not asking for help,
right,
she's going to figure it out.
Some midwives will give you a, I guess, an aim, or like, hey, can you feel my fingers?
Yeah, that seems to help.
And usually I've found they're usually asking the woman to push further towards the perineum as, yeah, opposed to the front.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that their instinct, yeah, is to push more towards the front, but we actually have to, like, almost
push towards your booty.
Use your butt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lean, yeah, your back into it.
Well, on that note.
on the perineum note.
You know, it's, I will throw this out because I had this pearl of wisdom out of birth just recently, which is that a lot of our moms are afraid of the moment they poop a little bit during birth,
oh, yeah,
and other people around. And in labor, I've never seen it be an issue, but, right, meaning they don't even know what happened. They're not aware. They don't care. But beforehand, I've seen some of the moms get really anxious about it. And it makes sense to me. I would too. You know, pooping with an audience. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's usually just like a tiny smidge. And, yeah, I think because we want the baby to be exposed to all of her digestive bacteria,
yeah,
right? I think it's like nature says, hey, you're going to have to go like down around the rectum first, kind of like get a little dose of, no, a little dose
I
of
think
intestinal
it's a different
bacteria.
Set of bacteria. Different, yeah, fecal bacteria is different than
that's the,
intestinal bacteria.
That's the good stuff, I think. Just a little, who knows? Anyway, once again, on that note, Lindsay, any final pearl of wisdom for our audience here today?
You know, I don't know. I think the biggest thing is, you know, from start to finish, we kind of encourage the woman to take an active role in her pregnancy. And that not only means literally active, but that means be involved in all aspects of the pregnancy from start to finish, like what you put into your body, who you consult with, talk to your doctor, talk to your midwife. If you're getting a bad vibe from them, then get a different consult, because
move on.
Yeah, you're the consumer here, and when it's all said and done, you're the one that's going to be left with the bag of emotions, whatever those are, you know. And you know, I don't like to have any regrets, so looking back at my knee surgery, that's why I interviewed like 3 or 4 different surgeons. Like, I'm not going to go into this huge event with somebody that's maybe on board or maybe with the same philosophy as me. I want my whole team with eye on the prize, you know? So I think taking an active role in taking back birth is like the name of the game.
I think the work Amen. That you're doing is amazing. And you just had the Birth Fit Summit. And
yeah,
it was
you spoke.
Wicked. I spoke. It was just wicked to see like more like Lindsay clones, people who are just so such doers and so passionate and like young and energetic and going out there into the world and spreading the message, you know, with megaphones. It's incredible to see what you put together. And I know it's just like, these are seeds, these are sprouts, and we're going to see the fruits of that labor, no pun intended. And I think that it's also incredible to see women the ones who are fit all the way through, it's cool that they stay fit during pregnancy, but the ones who you take that neglected their health leading up to the pregnancy and then are able to take charge of it during the pregnancy and feel 10 times better towards the end of pregnancy than they felt before pregnancy, that's incredible to watch. And then they have a killer birth, and they just come out of it like, there's nothing I can't do in this world.
And they're super empowered, and they're like, holy crap, I just did that. Like,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you guys for joining us on the podcast today. Where can we find you on the social world, social media?
We're birthfit.com, at birthfit.
Twitter, Instagram.
Twitter, Instagram.
Facebook.
Facebook, all that good
Snapchat.
Stuff.
Snapchat?
No.
Thank God. Okay. I thought I was the only one.
I'm sort of like, I'm not very good at Twitter. And I'm usually
but
the one.
You're killing it on Instagram. So.
I'm on Instagram, and
Twitter's going, you know.
I feel like Twitter had its time. Yeah. Snapchat's getting in there, and I'm too old for Snapchat. But
me too. I'm in that generation. My kids are like, what?
Yeah. But we also have BirthFit affiliates around the U.S. So if you go to our affiliate page, you can go find them. And, you know, these people are hubs of information in their communities. And they know OB-GYNs. They know midwives. They know doulas. They do personal training. They do chiropractic. Like, go find them, because they cannot wait to help you out.
How can someone become an affiliate?
So all affiliate application information is online. Just go to the affiliate tab, scroll down. It is a big application process. All applications are due by December 1st. Our team goes through it, and then we interview people. Like last year, we probably had 50 applications, and we took maybe 10. This year, we've already had probably 45 submitted.
Awesome.
But we want these people being leaders in their community and with the same philosophy and, you know, fire starter attitude that we have.
Lindsay clones.
So
we need them.
Lindsay clone with kids.
Lindsay clone with kids.
Affiliate information due by December 1st.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Ivy, thank you so much for being here.
So happy to be here. You ladies are badass.
No kidding. I feel weak and pale. I'm going to go look for Pokemon.
No.
Thank you for joining us on the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. For show notes and resources from today's episode, visit informedpregnancy.com. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, write to info@informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn, and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm.
As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Bomb, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Bomb not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Bomb, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.